They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I want to welcome a congressional candidate from Pennsylvania, Andy Ostrowski, today on the Commons. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. You have made the HOA issue a centerpiece of your campaign. Can you tell me why?
Well, yeah. My background, just so your listeners and viewers know, I'm running for United States Congress in the 11th Congressional District in Pennsylvania. It's a small slice, gerrymandered slice of central Pennsylvania that covers parts of 9 counties. And actually, you know, my first introduction really to the HOA issues came through a woman who I might have a background as a civil rights lawyer. And I had represented one of the people who had become an activist in the area. I had represented her and her daughter in a matter in the past. And when she found out I was running for Congress earlier this summer, she reached out to me and said, "Hey, one of the first things she told me about was this Sue Bartholomew, and that's the show I need to get on, and I need to study these issues." Well, as the campaign continued, I started to get connected with a few other people who have been, through social media, who have been dealing with homeowners association issues. And I just slowly started to educate myself, and I became, connected a little more closely, connected with a couple of them, and they educated me. They just presented me with information and really made me realize how significant a problem that this is. And, at first, I had, again, prior to running for Congress, I had heard whisperings through the years, I had heard people having complaints about things, but a case never came my way, and there was never a real professional opportunity for me to really engage in the issue. But as the people that I've networked with, continue to educate me, I really started seeing this as a huge civil rights issue. And, my passion, my career has been constitutional law, the civil rights of individual American citizens. And that's fundamentally, to me, what I see these HOA issues as. And, so in several respects, it fits in perfectly with the overall theme of my campaign. What motivated me really to run for this office was some total breakdowns in the court system and how, the rights of the individual, access to courts and things of that nature are a real problem in this country. The control that lawyers and bar associations and politically connected people have over the judiciary has really corrupted the entire process. And this HOA issue really brings a lot of that to light, because ultimately, all these issues, I just actually posted something up yesterday. I wanted to study these things a little bit more in preparation for your show. And I had some people, provide me some information. And I wrote up a piece on my campaign site that I called The Perfect Storm, how HOAs are the perfect storm of political cronyism and legislative and judicial abuse, because you have the moneyed corporate interests behind the scenes running the show, basically buying their legislatures through the CAI lobby group, and you know, it's a legislative and it's a judicial problem and it's a corporate problem, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of how I got interested in it all, and it's a huge, huge issue in this country.
So you hit the nail right smack dab on the head. You've got it pretty well covered. I've been to legislative hearings, and I've watched CAI and all their cronies. And they have these different organizations that they get together, the real estate people, and they've got a separate, CAI's got a separate managers association, the same people. But basically, you've got two voices. For some reason, the rules that apply to them simply and sweetly don't apply to the homeowners. I mean, the ridiculous stuff that they say and the stuff that they try to get the legislators to buy into, and unfortunately a lot of the legislators are just plain dumb enough to buy into it. I'm sorry, I'm putting it bluntly, but yeah, they do buy into it.
Well, bluntly is the only way to put it, and the way you articulated it is good as well. And this is, I mean, this playing field as I'm viewing it, it's not just slightly tilted in favor of the Homeowners Association. It's like a 90-degree slant almost. Yeah. I mean, you've got legislators, lobbyists, and courts, and local governments and state governments on one side of it. And then you've got individual American citizens who are trying to, you know, fulfill their dreams and raise their families and live in peace and comfort and build something for the future on the other. And, you know, the problem that I see is there's no real collective voice. And, you know, and I commented to you before we got on the air that I've talked over the past several weeks, I've talked to a lot of people, and everybody who hears that I'm talking with you says, well, you're great because you're doing a real service, giving a voice to these people out there. And, you know, this is right up my alley. You know, I for some reason, the way I'm constructed is I go against, you know, these big public interests, you know, these abusive government interests, and stand up for the what I call, and I, you know, affectionately call the little people in our world. And you know, this area really just is in need of someone like me, and other, not just me, but you know, people like-minded like me, who really take an interest in these things and want to help the individuals out that are really suffering through this system.
Well, I think what we need is someone who's got the backbone to stand up and be honest about what they're thinking. And that seems to be as rare as hen's teeth. It's very difficult to find someone who will stand up and say this is wrong. They just don't want to offend the industry because the industry's got the money and the connections and all right. of that. But with more and more people standing up, and I keep telling people, you can't be afraid. It's your home. It's your life. You cannot allow fear to rob you of all of that. And that's all it amounts to is fear.
Well, you're absolutely right. But we as the advocates, you know, we need to be really empathetic towards the fears that these people have.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, most people are going through life trying to find ways to educate their children and provide for their families and live in safe and secure homes. And when you get involved in some of these HOA issues, you're going into the teeth of some pretty powerful and very wealthy interests. And it's a very, very daunting task for people. And, you know, I've dealt with, I mean, not just the HOA area, but in dealing with the, you know, people who have their constitutional rights violated, it takes a tremendous amount of courage to overcome that fear and to persist in the face of the abuses that you suffer. Because what happens to you is, you know, people get so dragged down and drawn out and abused by the system, by the HOAs in this case, or by their government, you know, abusive governments in other cases. And then when they go and try to get relief through the court system, it's a second, you know, abuse. I mean, people come to the court system with hope and inspiration and feeling like, finally, I'm landing in the seat of justice in this country. And they end up just suffering a second set of abuses through the court systems that ends up sometimes being more painful than the first. And it just exacerbates their injuries. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage and will and substance and, you know, patient and compassionate people to represent them and nurture them and help them along through this process. So, yeah, it does take a special kind of person. And, you know, I'm just lucky and blessed to to have been wired that way.
Well, you've also suffered at the hand at this, so you're not exactly unscarred by the system. Shall we talk about the fact that you have lost your license?
Oh, sure.
To practice,
yeah.
Right now, let's get that out of the way.
Yeah. And you know, I have a website, andyostrowski.com, which is my campaign website. And I, you know, early on in this campaign, because I knew this is an issue that would come up, I did what I called a personal and professional disclosure. So anybody that wants to know the details about it can refer to that, and I try to lay it out in as fair and honest and balanced a way as I possibly could. You know, but the reality of the situation, you know, to get to the heart of it is, yeah, I had some personal suffering and some personal experiences that, you know, that interfered with my practice at a couple times in the past. But because I was a courageous and zealous advocate for, individuals who were suffering in this system, I became a target of the judicial discipline system. And, you know, again, there's a whole, piece aspect of this thing through the judiciary where this is the heart of control. This is why the abuses are allowed to happen the way they happen in the HOA industry or for whistleblowers or for victims of, you know, police brutality and things of that nature. So, yeah, and it happens all over the country. I've also networked with many civil rights lawyers or advocates across the country who have had disciplinary problems. I've worked with a man, a courageous man, who probably has filed more federal civil rights lawsuits than anybody in the country in his career, and never did a darn thing wrong. And just because, you know, we have to say things like judges aren't being fair and our government doesn't work for us, things that we should be totally free to say, we become targets of the disciplinary system. So, you know, I have my, you know, my license was suspended in 2010. It's been eligible to be reinstated since February, March 2011. I am undertaking steps. I had a lot of litigation behind the scenes on my case, some things that had to play out and be sorted out. But I'm eligible to be reinstated, and frankly, because I'm doing things like running for office and talking about corrupt courts and a judicial system that's broken, and because I'm, you know, standing up and speaking out on a show like On the Commons, you know, it's not going to be easy for me. They're going to find all kinds of ways. In fact, I have an organization that I developed called the Pennsylvania Civil Rights Law Network, and there's a website associated with that. That's pretty much my personal blog and some Facebook pages. But, you know, I actually had a lawyer come to me in 2012 and say, Andy, I'll get you your license back. All you need to do is take down your website. And I looked at, yeah, I mean, you know, so if a lawyer does not have a First Amendment right to speak out and advocate, then what rights does anybody who hires a lawyer really have? And that's a real problem in this system, Shu, and it needs some very serious attention. So, you know, a lot of people in your listening audience, you know, I just need to give them that admonition that, you know, and it's very difficult for me to say because I was a true believer in myself and my career and my path and the goodness and righteousness of the system of justice, but it just doesn't work. So all those people out there who think that there is, you know, a quick fix judicial solution to the individual problems you're suffering, you know, unfortunately, in many cases that there aren't. And that's kind of why, you know, I'm doing this through running for a political office, because I do believe in the, you know, the substance of our Constitution and the strength and values of the American people. And I believe that there are still political solutions to these problems as long as we can start electing legislators and congressmen who aren't sold out to this big money system. I mean, you had commented on that before, about, you know, how you just can't find people to go into the teeth of this, because the whole system is kind of rigged and structured, and it's a cultural problem. This is a societal problem. It's kind of, you know, structured to create a certain kind of candidate who will say what they have to say to get the big moneyed interest to back them so they can get elected to office. Well, I don't have all that. You know, I have a lone voice that I try to speak to truth and justice and, you know, central principles like that. And I'm hoping, honestly, you know, I'm 2 weeks away from an election today as we speak. And, you know, I'm hoping that some of your listeners out there hear my message and you know, say, hey, yeah, this guy's right. This is the kind of guy that we need to get elected, and you know, we can find some ways to turn out some vote here. And again, not just because it's Andy Ostrowski, and not just because it's my personal future on the line, but I'm cut from a different kind of cloth. And if you get one person like me in there, then another person out there will say, well, this guy was able to do it, so I'm going to do it that way. And then maybe five more, then maybe 10 more. And we can turn this thing around, and we can give power back to the people, and we can, you know, have government work for us. And that's why I'm doing what I do.
I think it takes one person, one voice to turn things around. But have you reached out to other candidates to see if there's any kind of mutual interests that you could combine forces, maybe once you're all in office? Because we've got to clean out Washington. There's some bad stuff going on there.
Well, I'm a total political outsider. I've never run for office before. I see the wisdom of doing it through the political process of what I'm doing, but I'm not a well-financed candidate. I don't have, you know, a system behind me. I get in my car, I drive out, I meet people on the streets, you know, I focus on the individual needs. So I haven't really had a chance to network with other legislators, and I'm kind of, you know, in all candor, I'm a little late to come into this this HOA issue. So I haven't really built that network, but I assure you that, you know, my words are credible when I put them down, and I stand behind what I say. And when I say I see a huge issue here in this HOA area and arena, those are words that I mean. And, you know, if I get elected, once I get elected, you know, I most certainly will start reaching out to others. You know, I'll find out how much support there is out there. I have, you know, some people, you know, post some articles and things, and I understand that there's some representatives in Florida that are trying to really get their governor on board, and, you know, a couple other people across the country. So, and there's a woman out in Washington running for office who I've been connected with. I haven't had a chance to really deal with the issues on her. But this is just, you know, slowly building a network. I see right to the heart of the issue here. And it's an issue I'm going to remain committed to. You know, come November 5th, I'll either be the candidate or the congressman-elect for the 11th Congressional District, or, you know, I'll be will continue to be a constitutional rights advocate who's going to, you know, continue to take on this issue with HOAs and, you know, get my license back, you know, with all the fights that will be entailed in that, and, you know, try to fight this thing through the courts, in the courts, around the courts, through the political process. You know, I really do believe that this is a very important issue. What really turned the tide for me was when somebody put this statistic in my face that some 60 million Americans live in homeowners associations. That's just jaw-dropping, because these things are quasi-governments and just rogue boards who aren't accountable to any political process and are given these vast governmental powers. I mean, you know, things like the power to fine, punish people for violations of community rules without due process protections, without hearings, without standards of proof of beyond a reasonable doubt, and, you know, no right to confront your witness and challenge these things. You know, it's just, it's something that really, really needs to be addressed seriously, and I'm going to remain committed to this issue.
In your paper that you wrote, you talk about people losing their homes for a few $100s. Andy, I told you I've been at this for a very, very long time, and I've actually heard of people losing their homes for pennies. Literally pennies.
Wow.
An old lady in Florida a number of years ago, and you could have found the change in any sofa anywhere.
That's absolutely and tragic.
It is tragic, and it's usually the elderly. It's usually the most vulnerable people in our society that are targeted, because the associations don't think they can fight back.
Yeah, where is the conscience of these people? I mean, this is what big money interests. This is what big money does in this world. It robs people of their consciences and their compassion and their empathy for their fellow man. And, my gosh, you know. And I said a couple $100s in the piece because I thought I saw a case where somebody had $100.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I didn't want to oversell it. So I, you know, just put the couple $100s in there.
Yep.
Absolutely, you know. And then that leads me even to another issue. I mean, this foreclosure process. You know, and that's really the heart, part of the heart of what I talked about is, you know, a lot of these things end up being what are called non-judicial foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, foreclosures where before you buy a house, you're waiving all your rights to due process, to presentment of notes and contracts and proof, you know, standards of proof and things of that nature, where women, like you're just telling me, are losing their homes for pennies or for violating flower pot rules or for waving the American flag. And you can't even get judicial access. And then when you do go into courts, you know, what happens is oftentimes the judges are connected to the same moneyed influences that are behind the homeowners associations and the townships and municipalities out there. And it's just, again, I just use the word tragic and really shocking what goes on in that industry. Really shocking.
Well, I don't know. I haven't kept track. But at one point, a number of the judges in the Fairfax County Circuit Court got their legal training, their legal feet wet, writing covenants for the industry, big firms, big box firms that they had. And you know, when they sit there at the bench and they have to judge a situation that's gone up against something perhaps that they wrote. I don't know that they did, but perhaps that they wrote, or they know that their buddy wrote in whatever firm it happened to be in where they were representing the developers.
Well, you know,
how fair is that going to be?
Yeah, you know, and that really gets to the heart of the unique expertise and insight that I bring to this issue. I mean, we have a problem in this country with big law firms and lawyers having way too much influence in that aspect that you're talking about and over the political process in particular, or, you know, overall. And that issue that you're talking about right there, that really, I mean, these lawyers are getting paid $400 and $500 and $600 an hour to work for these moneyed interests, these big corporate interests, and they're drafting provisions to, you know, get paid and support their clients. And then exactly what you're saying. Then these lawyers are the ones who become judges, or their colleagues become judges because of, you know, they're high profile attorneys and, you know, they're politically connected attorneys. And then when you add to that, you know, the control that the bar associations and the courts have over lawyers and licenses, I mean, that really, you know, and that's a huge, huge hidden problem in all of this, is the control of lawyers and judges and bar associations over access to these issues. Yeah, I mean, I know that there are cases that favor a homeowner here, a homeowner there, and there are judges that don't completely lose their conscience along the way, but the deck is totally stacked, and it's totally stacked not just in, you know, as a corporate HOA, CAI interest versus the individual homeowner, but you add to that this whole judicial system and the way it's weighted, and the way that you know, judges are selected, and the influence of money in that process, and it just tips the scales even farther. So that's a huge aspect of this thing that I kind of have a unique insight to. That is a problem across the country in all areas. But you're right on the money there, Sue. That's very well said that we articulated that.
Now, there are a lot of problems, and one of the other issues is homeowners trying to find attorneys to represent them. You say there are a few cases here and there where the homeowner wins, and I often go to court with some homeowners if they let me know, and if it's in, you know, in my local court here, and I will go in and sit in on it. It's very difficult to find an attorney who understands this area of the law. They don't know it.
Uh-huh.
And if they do take a case, and if they happen to win it, CAI is all over them like a bad rash. And right. I've seen that happen a number of times. But I've also seen attorneys who really didn't know what they were doing, and they argued the wrong cases. And the judges, you know, to be fair, some of the judges are absolutely, you know, they're in the pockets of CAI and all of that. But to be fair, some of them have not been given a very good case. They've not been, you know, they've got this nonsense that they have to sort of sift through. And the arguments that were made by the homeowner's attorney are not very good. You know, and the judge can only do with it, what they're doing with it. So a problem is not having attorneys who know what they're doing. I occasionally get calls from attorneys saying, I've got a client and they've got a problem and I really don't know what to do about it. How do I deal with it? Well, I'm not an attorney. I can't give them legal advice. I can tell them where to look. But I can...
If I can kind of pick up and comment on that a little bit,
do.
You know, I see that because I see it. I mean, over the past couple of years, I've been dealing with a lot of people who have gone through, you know, the private mortgage foreclosure industry. And it's the same obstacle that you see in these HOAs. And, you know, there's a tendency in this country to over buy into the fact that, well, you signed a contract. Well, it's in the contract. Well, you signed a contract. So you're kind of stuck with what you signed. You know, don't come in, don't fulfill your contractual obligations and come into this court and then complain that, that it's unfair. You know, it's like too late. You know, this whole freedom of contract. I mean, it's a very sound and valuable and vital principle to the way our country needs to be run. But because of what we just talked about in terms of, you know, the way these provisions are drafted by high-paid, high-priced lawyers, and the way they're inserted into these documents without a lot of people having a lot of understanding as to, you know, I mean, these people are raising families. They're middle-class Americans looking to, you know, work in their jobs and raise their children and send their children to school and go to baseball games and live lives like that. They're not educated in the law. So, you know, when I posted that that piece last night, you know, I talked about there is some you know, precedent that, you know, these contracts, to the extent that they're involved in waiving constitutional rights and things of that nature, I mean, these things need to be argued. I mean, these things need to be presented in a lot more detail. So it's a whole contracting process. And I don't know, I mean, you're talking about instances where you're in court with lawyers. I don't know enough about the specifics to really comment on them. But I kind of see this being a theme that, you know, we just in this society, well, you signed a contract, you're stuck with the terms. Well, we all know how that process works, and we all know how that whole playing field is tilted in favor of who drafts the contracts. And, you know, we need ways to go after, you know, the waivers of these rights and the constitutional issues at heart here, and not just the contractual issues. And that's really, you know, what the level that this thing needs to be analyzed on.
Andy, on your in your paper, you talk about separately negotiating some of these waivers. Before we get into that, I want to talk about that for a minute. But before we get into that, let me just paint a picture. And my regular listeners have heard this, so if you're new, this might be new information for you. But I live in Fairfax County, where it's a huge county right outside of Washington D.C.
We'll be neighbors. Come
next January. Oh, absolutely. We'll just have a river separating us, Andy. Yeah. That'll be fun. Yeah. But Fairfax County mandates associations. So as do a lot of jurisdictions, especially around major urban centers like Washington or New York or Illinois or Chicago, or, you know, all of these major areas. They mandate associations. The estimate, we don't have exact numbers, but the estimate is that over 90% of all homes in Fairfax County are in mandatory membership associations. Or as my friend Bill Davis would say, they're in voluntary membership associations. So when you have something like that and you have no choice in housing, to say that you agreed to let some bozo walk in on your into your house and decide what color your curtains can be is absurd.
Well, I'm actually very glad that you brought that point up, because I was looking over some information on that. And I saw that jumped right off the page at me when I saw that some of these municipal, local, county governments mandate, you know, these homeowners associations. I mean, that in itself is an unconstitutional delegation of governmental power to private institutions. I don't know how that can ever pass constitutional muster if somebody challenges this in that way. And you talk about, you know, taking everything that we've talked about already and even stacking the deck more in favor of these HOAs, I mean, this gives the government a vested interest in the success of these HOAs And, you know, then the judges are appointed by the same counties or elected through the same counties. That is an absolutely huge aspect of this. And that needs to be gone after very directly. And, that would be, you know, a lot of this stuff, Shu, you know, when you run for a congressional office, you got to be really sensitive to, the federalism concerns. And when I say that, I mean the power of the state government versus the power of the federal government. And, in many respects, they are state government issues. But with this going on across the country and the numbers that it goes on, it really does have federal congressional implications. And federal hearings need to be held on these issues. And witnesses need to be called in from CAI and all across the country to really get to the heart of these issues. But this process, that is a legislature enacting a law that requires a county or a county adopting their ordinance that requires these private entities to run the lives of all the people in it. That's an outrage. It's an absolute outrage.
Well, it gets even worse. It gets even worse than that, Andy, because where you have, and then you'll say, all right, so you have roughly about 8-10% of the housing that does not have an HOA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a couple of things that happen there. They've decided that these are the older homes because we've had these mandates in place since the 1982 or 83, around that time. But these older homes are not making good use of land, so they need to be taken out and they need to be replaced. So the little old house that sits on a quarter acre, a third of an acre, or whatever, is just abusing the process and using too much land. So what they will do, if they don't go after them with eminent domain and take them away, what they will do is they will rezone them from R4 to maybe R34. So now you've got this little development that's zoned for increased density. And since that's the zoning, then the county is going to start taxing them as if there were 34 units sitting on that 1 acre.
So it gets to
the point where people cannot afford it. They cannot afford the taxes.
Yeah. And that's every bit more of the same outrage that I just expressed. And that gets to, another one of these points that had been raised, this whole issue of double taxation. So, these county governments, municipal governments, they're increasing their tax rolls by taking residents off the tax rolls, but making them pay taxes. And then they're getting double hit by having to pay their HOA fees.
Yeah.
And, where's all this money going?
I don't know because they're always crying poverty. We don't have any money. How do you expect us to do that? But I want to go.
This just keeps getting deeper and deeper and more interesting and more compelling something that needs some national attention. So, I'm not hearing anything so far that's changing my opinions as I've already expressed them.
The fear factor, the only thing that keeps these things afloat is the fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
And people are terrified. They're told that it's going to protect their property values.
Uh-huh.
In the past, a lot of the declarations would state unequivocally that the purpose of this association is to protect property values. A friend of mine decided he was going to test that out, so he sent a letter to his association. He says, here's a copy of my declaration. It says right here that the purpose of this association is to protect property values. Now, when I invest in anything, the investment company that I work with has got to send me a periodic report on how well my investment is doing. So they've taken my money and they've invested it in, a number of different things. They need to tell me how much it's grown, what it's done. Can you please tell me how well, what you have done to protect my property values, how well my property values are faring compared to a similar sized property in a non-HOA? And anyway, he had a whole slew of these questions, which he sent in, and CAI just went absolutely ballistic. I mean, the attorneys were going, what are we going to do with this? So now, after that, they took that out. They no longer draft documents or declarations with anything that's like that. You know, so there's no purpose for the association. What is the purpose?
Well, and that touches on even another issue. I mean, I've been reading some stuff. You know, your governments are subject to sunshine laws, open records laws,
right,
where the citizens have rights to go in and request information, and your governments have to produce them. Well, I believe that there are exemptions built in for a lot of these homeowners associations. And so you can't even get, I mean, you're right on point. You can't even get the information that you would easily be entitled to if it was a government agency. Or like you said, I mean, I don't know how that even works. I mean, that they're exempting, I mean, here they are proclaiming that this is some grand freedom of contract principle, but then they're not even fulfilling their contractual duties of providing information. I mean, this is just, it's just absolutely, amazing how out of skew this whole system is.
Oh, it's horrible. Andy, you're an attorney. You told me yesterday when we talked that a lot of these are constitutional issues and need to be argued constitutionally. One of the things that you say in your paper is a provision that effectively waives certain key constitutional rights must be separately negotiated.
Yeah, and that's that comes out of these what used to be these called confession of judgment issues, and these are arguments that are being made in some of these non-judicial foreclosure states. There's a case that I cited in the piece that I wrote called Overmyer v. Frick. It was a 1972 United States Supreme Court case. And the Supreme Court said, look, we recognize these principles of freedom of contract, and we're going to stand by them and uphold them. However, you know, if we are going to find that individual American citizens are waiving their constitutional rights, then we're going to require a little bit more in terms of, you know, the contracting process. I mean, if people knew like things like, for example, you are waiving your right, you know, you are allowing, giving away, the power to this HOA to find you, and waiving your right to due process, and waiving your right to proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And this was set out in bold and required initials next to it. And all, you know, you're waiving your right to, appear in court and defend his foreclosure action and had you initial it. And they said, and in consideration of these constitutional rights, we're going to give you X, Y, and Z. They might have some leg to stand on and it might be enforceable. But my understanding, and just to be perfectly candid, I've never really, read one of these HOA contracts or all the declarations and covenants and things of that nature. But my understanding is that a lot of these provisions are tucked away either in your contract documents or in the covenants that you agree to that they don't even show you when you're signing your contract and you can't get copies of, and then they rely on them. So this comes as part of the contracting process, that you should, start demanding that there has to be certain specific disclosures, each of which has to be separately initialed by the homeowner and has to be supported by separate consideration. So that's, and to me, this would be something that a whole class of people across the country could band together in some form of class action lawsuit and say, something in the courts called declaratory judgments, where you can present issues to courts without having, before you're injured by them, but while you may be injured by them, and ask a court to declare the rights between people. And, you can get people together across the country and say, we want a declaration from these courts that these contracts do not have adequate disclosures and are therefore unconstitutional. And that's a way, that's one way that that some of these things could be gone after. Of course, you need, whether you need the license attorney. I mean, there's a whole bunch of bigger picture issues here that I kind of skirt over. But, that's where you'd need some good, sound legal advice and counsel and leadership on that issue. But, that's a real fertile ground to attack a lot of these contracts. And that became clear to me when I was, looking through some of this stuff.
Well, a lot of the declarations will have very vague covenants. It'll be something like you may not alter the front of the house without written permission. Now describe what altering the front of the house means. Does planting a rose bush alter the front of the house?
Right.
Does putting on a fresh coat of paint alter the front of the house? Does putting up a flag alter the front? I mean, they'll use anything. You know, obviously, if you put up a canopy and you, you know, put an extension on there and all of that, that's, to me, that's altering it. But well, little things like having an unapproved garden hose is altering the front of the house. You did not get permission to have that garden hose in your front yard, therefore we're going to fine you.
Yeah, and that's where you what you're losing, you know, in government accountability. I don't know how all these boards are assembled and elected, but I guess, you know, they have some kind of, you know, election among the homeowners, but it's not a vote. It's not, you know, these people are not bonded by public public officials' bonds and things of that nature. And oftentimes you get, you know, and, you know, for lack of a better term, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but you get the busybodies out there who are just looking to, you know, you find this in small governments. I mean, there's people that get a little bit of power, and, you know, they just are so rife to abuse their discretion that they get out and they become rogue over these issues. And that's where you lose. That's what you get when you lose government accountability, you know, and turning this thing over to people that just don't have the discretion and judgment and support of an electorate who puts them into office. So that's, you know, part of that problem there. And, you know, then of course the homeowners associations, you know, they're the ones, you know, they're using everybody's dues to pay lawyers to, you know, fight them. And then the lawyers, you know, they're doing whatever the homeowner people want to do. So they're going in and making absurd arguments like, you know, you got the wrong size garden hose in front of your house, or, you know, the wrong, you know, it's a flat paint that should be, you know, a semi-gloss paint, and silly things like that. And they're billing their homeowners associations $200 and $300 an hour to go, you know, serve, you know, file and serve cases like that. Then you have judges on the bench who were from these big law firms that drafted these HOA contracts. And, you know, it's in a system that is just, you know, my heart just goes out to all the people out there suffering in it, because I can just imagine the frustration and the anxiety and the, you know, lack of trust and faith in the system that people are experiencing. When there's, again, these people are just out there, you know, trying to raise families and communities of their choosing and give themselves their slice of the American dream. And then you got to run into the teeth of something like this and just become chewed up over it. And, you know, again, it just makes me all the more resolute and standing behind all of you in this issue.
You know, it's funny because you've named a whole host of bad people in bad situations. And you're absolutely right. They're all there. But let me tell you something, Andy. There's more of us than there are of them. So,
right. But they have the money. You know, they have the organization.
It's not
they have the money.
Money.
Yeah.
It's not the money. It's just standing up and saying, "Get the hell out of my way." I mean, it really is. I'm not going to take it anymore, because CAI will sit there and they'll come up with some of the most idiotic, ludicrous, hideous explanations for what's going on. All you have to do is go to their website and read it. The excuses that they come up with, come on, guys. You didn't agree to have your rights taken away from you. People are not allowed to have, you celebrate Christmas by having Christmas tree lights and religious symbols out there, or even non-religious holiday symbols like snowmen and so on. Oh, well, you didn't get permission, and, you know, you're going to bring down property values. And da 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 da. You know, wait a minute, guys.
I'm sorry for laughing. It's not even funny, but it's so.
It is funny.
Sometimes.
It is funny. It's so absurd. It is funny.
Yeah.
And they take themselves so seriously. You've got to laugh at
that.
Right. You know,
right.
If everybody in the neighborhood said no, you know, I don't care that you don't like colored Christmas lights. That's your problem. This is my house.
Right, right.
You know, but if you go to court, then the judge is going to say, oh, well, you know. But unless it specifically says you cannot have it, you have that right. CAI will tell you that unless it specifically says you can do it, then it's you can't do it. But no, it's the declaration, it's the conditions. Covenants, conditions, and restrictions. That's what CCNRs stand for, not permissions. They're restrictions. So if it's not in the governing documents, I don't care how you define a contract. No matter how loosely you want to take that, there is no way that you agreed to that.
Well, and you know, there are, even, you know, when we just keep it on pure contract principles, and I don't know how these cases are argued in the courts, but there are principles of contract law, unconscionable provisions, vague provisions. You know, the biggest principle, and I'm sure, you know, everybody should know this one, is, you know, the contract is construed, the language of the contract is construed against the person who drafted the contract.
Right.
So, you know, these vague provisions that are drafted by these homeowners associations and their lawyers, you know, they should all, the benefit in every single case should be given to the homeowner. And that's not, you know, from what I've seen, and again, I'm not 100, you know, detailed, I haven't read a lot of cases, but, you know, the whole playing field is tilted in favor of the homeowners association, where you can't even, you know, get access on these real basic principles of contract law. You know, I mean, and the points that you're raising about the, you know, colored Christmas lights and things of that nature, I mean, you're right on the point there. And I mean, a fair and just court should you know, be laughing like we are at these HOA lawyers when they come in and try to support these kind of arguments and say, are you kidding me? You know, are you really serious that you're going to argue this stuff? Get this out of my courtroom and kind of stop doing this. And, you know, that really gets to another principle, and this is what I've argued to courts. You know, if these courts just showed the resolve and courage to stand firm and smack someone down the way they needed to be once or twice, that would provide such a disincentive for people to keep getting away with this stuff. And so, again, ultimately, and this is where all these issues fall for me, this is a failing in the judicial system in this country, ultimately. I mean, these homeowners association issues, they are failings across the board, but the ultimate check on the abuse of power and authority in this system is in the judiciary. And if we had a functioning and effective judiciary that wasn't subject to all those influences that you and I talked about, you know, 20 minutes ago or so, this stuff wouldn't go on, and it shouldn't go on. Then that's where, you know, we need to get this judiciary in check in this country. And then, you know, we can level out the legislative playing field and know that when there are abuses of the law and misconstructions of contracts, that at least at the end, you're going to have a fair judicial system that's going to provide the check on these kind of abuses.
Andy, in your paper, you say the question I keep getting is what can be done? And you said the answer is both simple in its identification of the solution, but a bit more complex in how to achieve it. And I could have kissed you when I read your next sentence. One simple solution is just ban them. I don't think that's going to happen realistically, much as I would love to see them banned, because I think they are a failed experiment.
Uh-huh.
And I think some people will say, oh, well, they've been around a long time. They're no longer experiments. Yeah, they are experiments, because we haven't found anything that works yet. And for the last 40-plus years, all we've been doing is just adding and adding and adding to the whole concept. So we keep experimenting, tweaking, and trying to make this lead balloon fly, and it's just not going to get off the ground.
Uh-huh.
We've got a few minutes left, and so have you got any thoughts on how you're going to attack this?
Well, you know, I'm gonna attack it, you know, pretty much just by doing what I've been doing and educating myself, and you know, to be perfectly candid and fair, you know, I would like to hear the arguments that oppose what I'm saying. You know, I would like someone to really articulate the virtues and the constitutionality and, you know, the principles that make these things good. You know, that's the way to have a discussion and a debate, is to hear all sides of the story and make some decisions. So I do. I mean, and that's, you know, when you're an attorney, you know, you know your opponent, and you know your opponent's case, and you know their facts. You want to know what they say. And as a legislator, the same. I mean, there are people out there who have an interest. They have a voice too. And if these things are going to work and work effectively and function, then let's hear what you have to say. But let's also hear you respond to what we're saying. And let's get this CAI. I mean, I looked at something that they wrote, you know, to try to justify, you know, the constitutionality of some of these things. And it was just, you know, total mumbo jumbo flowery language that really didn't get the heart of a lot of these issues.
Gibberish.
So, you know, it's just a matter of networking. It's just a matter of access. It's just a matter of talking to people and being a voice. You know, and the way I say it is, I'm an ear first and a voice second. So I need to, you know, listen to people first and understand what they're saying, and then become the voice of reason and leadership and wisdom and judgment on these issues. And for me, and I just remind your listeners, again, it's not just a personal mission for me, but I'm running for United States Congress. And I hope that I've said enough, or I believe I've said enough, to make people believe that, oh, my, we do have someone out there who has the wisdom and intelligence and courage to go after these issues. So, whatever anybody out there can do to help me get the vote out in the 11th Congressional District so that we can have a toe in the door, if not a foot in the door, on these issues, that's an immediate need of mine. I mean, again, win or lose the election come November 5th, I'm still going to be an advocate and a voice for these issues. But between now and November 4th, I need to turn out some votes and, find a way to get in. So then, because you need favorable people in the political system, in the legislatures across the country, who are going to be your ear, who are going to be your voice, who are going to fight for these issues and really start to, push back a little bit and tilt this field back. I mean, the banning thing, I don't know. I mean, I know that has some appeal, but that's probably not realistic.
It's not. It's much as I'd love to see that happen. Andy, tell us exactly where the 11th District is in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, the 11th Congressional District covers parts of 9 counties in the Hazleton. It's actually the home of the Kids for Cash scandal that people have heard of. It goes, Harrisburg, which is the state capital, has part of Harrisburg in the counties in the south, and goes up through Wilkes-Barre, Hazleton, Bloomsburg, Wyoming County, Columbia County, Northumberland County, Cumberland County, Dauphin County. And I have information on my site, andyostrowski.com. Go like my Facebook page, Ostrowski for Congress, and help me find where the homeowners association people are in my district, and let's target some messages to them and help them help us get the vote out. But this is me. I got 2 weeks left in the election, but long term, I'm going to continue to be an advocate for you and do everything that I can. So, if we can get some help and get some votes out and do whatever we can here in the short term, it'll be a long-term benefit for everybody.
Okay, Pennsylvania, you heard him. Get out and vote. Vote often. Vote early. Vote.
Yeah.
Some years ago, I was interviewed by a paper in Pennsylvania, and I don't remember. It was a long time ago. Because York County had mandated HOAs.
Oh.
York County, Amish County, right?
Those are neighboring counties to my district.
Okay.
Very close to my home, yeah, south central Pennsylvania.
So you may want to look and see if any of these counties have these mandates.
Yeah.
Because
if anybody out there listening knows, get in touch with me and let's reach out to those people and get them out working.
Okay. And your website again is andyostrowski.com.
Andyostrowski.com, yes.
Spell it out. I will put it in my promo, but I will.
Okay.
I want you to spell it out for the people who are listening, not on my website.
Yeah. Andy Ostrowski, Ostrowski, .com, and the Facebook is Ostrowski for Congress. Also, there's the Pennsylvania Civil Rights Law Network as well.
Can you give us the website for that?
Yeah, it's, Pennsylvania Civil Rights Law Network.com.
Okay, is it all written out, Andy?
Yes, but yeah, Pennsylvania Civil Rights Law Network also written out. And actually, there's another site, and it's where I've learned a lot of this stuff. Some people here got together. There's a site called Hidden Valley, Hidden Truths. That's where I've learned a lot of what I've learned, and it's not actually in my district, but it's close. And there's some people that could learn a lot by looking at that too. The Facebook page there that I've been putting stuff up on because it's been my one access point. So. You can look at that too, HiddenValleyHiddenTruths.com or .webs.com, and then there's a Facebook page for that too.
Andy, good luck.
Okay, thank you very much, Joe. Good talking to you.
I hope
you're doing great service to people.
Thank you. I hope that you win.
But
win, lose, or draw, I would like to invite you to come back.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, maybe we can set something up for after the election and see what we're celebrating or what direction we need to go. But I'd be more than willing to do that. And you got me on your team here for the duration.
Glad to have you on the team, Andy.
Okay, thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks to everyone for joining us.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. The On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.